Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive. This time, we're taking a look at Jeremiah's prophecies about the restoration of Israel. And we've got a fascinating expert lecture on Jeremiah 30:33 here that really gets into some interesting stuff. It's not your typical happily ever after story. We're going to kind of untangle this whole idea of now and not yet fulfillment, how these prophecies have kind of played out in stages throughout history, and what all that means for us today.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting, this idea of now and not yet. It really suggests this like tension between what's already been fulfilled and then what's still to come. And I think it really challenges our assumptions about how God works and how his plans unfold over time.
For sure. It's not a straight line, you know, from prophecy to fulfillment. The lecture lays out these four key promises of restoration that form the foundation of Jeremiah's vision. Can you walk us through those a little bit?
Yeah. So the lecture highlights a return to the land, rebuilding cities, especially Jerusalem, the coming Messiah.
Yeah.
And blessings that extend to all nations. So it's a vision of complete renewal, both physically and spiritually.
Okay, so it's not just about going back to a physical location, but there's like a deeper transformation that needs to happen as well. Now, the return from exile under Cyrus's decree in 536 BC, at first glance, that seems like a pretty clear fulfillment of prophecy.
Oh, it does. It does. But when you dig a little deeper,
yeah,
it's really not that simple. The expert actually uses this term, inaugurated eschatology, to describe this,
okay,
which is the idea that the end times, the ultimate fulfillment of God's promise, they've already begun, but they haven't yet reached their full completion.
Okay, that's really helpful. So inaugurated eschatology basically means that we're living in this tension between what's already happened and what's still to come. So the return from exile is part of that, but it doesn't tell the whole story.
Right, exactly.
What evidence do we have from the source material that points to this return from exile being incomplete, at least in terms of being the ultimate fulfillment of the prophecies?
Well, the lecture argues that if this return were the only read fulfillment, then prophets like Isaiah and Jeremiah, you've missed the mark, because their language is far too grand to be solely about a physical return. You know, Jeremiah himself in chapter 29, he talks about seeking God with all your heart to experience the full blessings of restoration. Mm-hmm. And I think this suggests that simply returning to the land wasn't enough. There's an inner transformation that needs to happen as well.
Right. And the expert also pulls in examples from other prophets, not just Jeremiah, right?
Yeah. Even 100 years after that first return, Nehemiah, who was a key leader at the time, he prays in Nehemiah 9, lamenting that the people are still in bondage, despite being back in their land. He acknowledges that they haven't fully broken free from the consequences of their sins.
Wow, that's pretty sobering, 100 years later. And they still feel the weight of exile in some way. It suggests that this return to the land, while important, didn't automatically fix everything. What about the prophets who came after this return? What did their writings tell us about the stage one of restoration?
Well, prophets like Joel, Zechariah, and Malachi, they all paint this picture of a people who are still wrestling with their relationship with God. Even after returning to the land, they issue warnings about continued judgment, and they emphasize this need for deeper repentance.
Yeah.
So it really underscores this idea that the return from exile was a starting point, not the end of the story.
Yeah, this is really starting to make me think differently about how I read those prophecies. So we've got stage one, the return to the land, which is significant, but not the ultimate fulfillment. Where does this now and not yet lead us?
That's where things get really fascinating. This brings us to Jesus entering the scene, marking stage two of the restoration. But with a twist, Jesus himself takes on a very Jeremiah-like role.
Hold on. Jesus is a Jeremiah figure. I think this is where things are going to get really interesting for our listener.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
This parallel between Jeremiah and Jesus, it might be unexpected, but it's crucial for understanding how the now and not yet continues to unfold.
Okay, this parallel between Jeremiah and Jesus, this is where I need you to kind of break things down for me and our listener. How can we say that Jesus is both fulfilling Jeremiah's prophecies and taking on a similar role? Those seem almost like contradictory ideas.
Yeah, it is fascinating how that works. So the lecture argues that Jesus' first coming inaugurated the kingdom. It's a key part of the fulfillment. But it also brought judgment because of Israel's unbelief, which mirrors Jeremiah's message of warning and lament.
So it's this kind of dual aspect to Jesus' ministry, right? He's bringing good news, but also delivering some hard truths, much like Jeremiah did. What specific parallels does the expert point to?
Well, the lecture highlights some really striking connections. For example, both Jeremiah and Jesus condemned the corruption they saw in the temple, the hypocrisy, the greed that had kind of seeped into this holy place.
Right. That definitely aligns with what we know about Jesus overturning the tables of the money changers, right?
Exactly. And both of them actually use the same phrase to describe the temple, a den of robbers, which the lecturer points out is a direct quote from Jeremiah chapter 7.
Wow, den of robbers. That paints a pretty vivid picture. It's interesting, though. If Jesus is fulfilling prophecy, and part of those prophecies is a return to the land and the rebuilding of Jerusalem, why would he be condemning the very temple that's central to all of that?
That's a great question. And I think that's where this concept of inaugurated eschatology helps us understand the complexity of what's happening. Yes, Jesus is fulfilling aspects of the prophecies, but his coming also ushers in this new era, one where the physical temple is no longer the sole focus of God's presence. Remember, Jeremiah himself pointed to a time when true worship wouldn't be confined to a specific location, but would be about a heartfelt connection with God.
Right, that makes a lot of sense. So Jesus is both fulfilling and indeedly transforming our understanding of what the restoration looks like. What other parallels does the lecture point to?
Well, another poignant connection is that both Jeremiah and Jesus lamented over Jerusalem's fate. They expressed deep sorrow for the city's rejection of God's messengers and the tragic consequences that would follow. The lecture actually shares some powerful quotes from both of them, highlighting the emotional weight of their pronouncements.
I'm picturing those images from the Gospels of Jesus weeping over Jerusalem and knowing that centuries before him, Jeremiah did the same. It really adds another layer to the idea of Jesus as a prophet, not just a miracle worker. So we've got this stage two, which is marked by Jesus's coming and this complex role he plays of both fulfilling and challenging the traditional understanding of restoration. What happens next in this now and not yet unfolding of events?
Well, stage one is a return from exile, and stage two is marked by Jesus's first coming. Stage three is still in the future, but it's casting a shadow over everything that's happening in those earlier stages.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Give me a little more to go on here.
The expert points to the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD as a pivotal event in this ongoing story. He calls it a second exile, a devastating echo of the Babylonian exile, but this time at the hands of the Romans.
So even with Jesus coming and inaugurating the kingdom, there's still this sense of incompleteness, this not yet aspect hanging over everything.
Exactly. The lecture emphasizes that this second exile reinforces that not yet piece of the puzzle. The complete restoration, the full realization of the kingdom awaits Jesus' second coming. That marks stage three.
This is really giving me a new perspective on how I read those Old Testament prophecies. It's not just ancient history. It's connected to events that unfold over centuries, including events that are still to come. So where does this leave us today? What does this all mean for those of us living in the 21st century? We're not in exile. We haven't seen Jesus' second coming. Where do we fit into this now and not yet?
That's the crucial question, isn't it? And as one the lecture tackles head on, the expert points out that we're currently living in this in-between time between stage two and stage three.
Okay, so we're living in this tension, this already but not yet space. I can see how that would raise a lot of questions about how we live, how we view current events, really how we make sense of our place in God's plan. What does the lecture have to say about that? So we're in this in-between time, this already but not yet space. What guidance does the expert offer on how we should be living while we're kind of navigating the space?
Yeah, the lecture really emphasizes that living in the now and not yet should create this sense of anticipation, but also this call to action. We experience the blessings of the new covenant, you know, like forgiveness, a direct relationship with God.
Yeah.
But we're also actively waiting for the full realization of the kingdom when Jesus returns.
So it's a both hand, not an either. It's not just sitting back and passively waiting, but it's also not pretending that the not yet isn't coming.
Right, exactly. The expert highlights this importance of living faithfully in the present, while remaining aware of that future reality of Jesus' return. This means actively participating in God's mission, extending his love and grace to the world around us. And we're called to be agents of reconciliation and restoration in our own spheres of influence.
So it's about living out the implications of the new covenant here and now. That makes sense. But it also kind of raises a question for me. If the last days began with Jesus' first coming, as the expert suggests, how does that impact our understanding of current events in the future? I mean, do we view everything through the lens of the end times?
Well, the lecture encourages us to view current events through the lens of God's ongoing plan of restoration. It's this call to discern how God might be working, even amidst turmoil and brokenness, to hold on to hope even when things seem bleak, knowing that God's purposes will ultimately prevail.
It's like a reminder that we're not just reacting to events, but we're actually actively participating in this much bigger story that's still unfolding. That's a powerful thought and, frankly, comforting.
It is. And it also impacts how we should approach the future. You know, this isn't about predicting specific dates or getting caught up in sensationalized end-time scenarios. It's about living with a sense of expectancy, knowing that Jesus' return could happen at any time, and being prepared spiritually and practically for that glorious day.
This has been an incredible deep dive. We've gone deep into Jeremiah's prophecies, untangled this whole now and not yet concept, and explored how Jesus both fulfills and reenacts Jeremiah's role. It's really challenged my understanding of God's plan and history, and even my own place in this grand narrative. What about you? What insights or questions will you be taking with you from this exploration?
You know, for me, it's this reminder that we're not just waiting for the future, we're actually living in it.
Yeah.
The kingdom has already begun, and we have a part to play in its unfolding right here, right now.
That's a powerful takeaway, and a challenging one, too. It makes me want to go back and re-examine my priorities and make sure I'm living in a way that reflects this reality of now and not yet.
Yeah, I think that's the heart of Jeremiah's message, too. This call to repentance, renewal, and faithful living, not just in anticipation of some future event, but as a response to God's present grace and the reality of his ongoing restoration.
For those listening, if this deep dive has sparked your curiosity, I really encourage you to go and explore Jeremiah's prophecies for yourself. They're full of richness and relevance for us today. And remember, even though we're living in this in-between time, we can live with confident hope, knowing that God's plan is unfolding, and we have the incredible privilege of participating in it.
Beautifully said. As we navigate this already but not yet, let's remember the words of the Apostle Paul. Therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into Jeremiah's prophecies and their implications for today. Until next time, keep exploring. Keep questioning and keep seeking truth.